Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Brian Brushwood, joined, as I've always been, by two co-hosts, Justin Robert Young.
Hey, man, this is a normal thing. We always open the show like this.
And Tony B. Casti.
Hello.
Oh, is that not? Oh, yeah, Bryce Castillo.
Thank you. Hi
Bryce.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Andrew is busy today.
He is on assignment.
He's on assignment.
That's a great phrase. That's what I want to do. Like, if I worked a 9-to-5, I'll just say, just tell everyone I'm out on assignment. And yeah. It's like, what's the assignment? I'm like, getting lit on Tuesday afternoon.
Andrew is out in Florida. It's funny. I was texting with him back and forth because I was actually in his apartment in Los Angeles because I was in Politicon selling the Contender. But we were just chatting because now all of a sudden there's a new construction back where our old office used to be. And they are
Wait a
building.
Minute. You're talking about in Florida?
In Florida.
This is the place where the offices where I first visited you and first, my goodness.
Yep. So all of a sudden he texts me that they are building a Wawa next to our old offices. And so he's like, you know, hey, look, and he just texts me this whole big block of text about like all the sliding door, like left the turns we could have taken instead of rights. And so instead of us having the lives that we've led, that we are leading now, we could be in Florida and here's who we'd be married to or dating or how many kids we would have had at this point, and this is what we'd be doing to make money. And in general, it's not necessarily the most flattering portrayal of what would have happened should we have just made our home in Florida and stayed there. But we would have had a Wawa.
I've noticed you do this before to use sliding doors as a universal metaphor, which I get because I remember the Gwyneth Paltrow
movie. I didn't get it. I thought you were talking about the automatic doors.
Right. Okay. I think that might be a you and I older thing because specifically, and by the way, if you haven't seen it, sliding doors is, as far as chick flicks goes, maybe the best one because it's got a sci-fi element for all the dudes in the audience, because it's basically, you know, two realities split in one. A chick makes the door in time to get on the subway, in the other she does not, and you follow the two parallel paths of what happens, because in one of them she comes home and catches her lover cheating on her, and the other one she doesn't. And I don't know. I've always enjoyed that metaphor, and I've always also questioned whether or not you and I were the only ones who got it.
Whether or not I should be making just casual references to Gwyneth Paltrow movie.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good little that was the one that
on,
caused.
Hold on. We have a phone call here coming in.
What?
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, long time listener, fan of the show.
Caller, do you have any, this is the Weird Things podcast. We talk about weird things. Is there any weird things that you'd like to talk about?
Well, as a matter of fact, I would like to talk about a weird thing that happened to me.
Uh-huh.
I think I may have seen a chupacabra.
What? Oh my gosh. Oh, caller, who's on the air, who we definitely have never heard from before. Tell us about your chupacabra encounter.
It was frightening. They said it was an iguana, but I know better. And there were a lot of them. And I was on an island, and I was trapped with them.
There's more than one. There's an island of chupacabra.
All right, Chupacabra Island. Wait, caller, where are you calling from?
Florida. Where else?
caller. Now, I've gone to South America, and I know there's a lot of iguanas that hang around. I would imagine in South Florida there would be a similar number of iguanas.
Pretty common reptile.
Yes, there are many of them. I kayaked to an island, and I walked around, and I may or may not have had to relieve myself, and I heard something moving in the bushes, and I thought everything would be fine. So I went to a different part of the island, and then I heard many things moving in the bushes, and I realized This was not an island man should tread on.
Caller, did you actually spot? I mean, can you confirm that they were iguana or chupacabras?
Well, I don't think there's a difference, to be honest.
I mean, listen, the way the globalists tell it.
Now, caller, were there? You know, chupacabras eat goats. If I know my lore right,
they suck goats, right? That's the they suck the blood of goats.
What blood? Whatever.
Well, caller, just tell us: is there are you safe now? That's what's most important to us.
Yeah. Is everything okay, caller?
I do have to drive through a long stretch of the Everglades where there are pythons.
Okay. Well, caller, if at any point while listening to this live broadcast on the internet, you feel unsafe or feel like you have an opinion to chime in on, please feel free to call in.
And go ahead and call right back in.
Okay.
All right. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, a random Florida man has called myself up.
Hey, man, what do we got on tap for today?
I don't know.
Oh, I was hoping to calmly segue because I know that in his absence, Andrew hooked us up with a number of stories that we can jump into. Let's see. Starting with, I'm going to read this.
Okay.
We're going to explore this together. You guys have not read these stories. Before ascending to heaven, Andrew left behind a number of scrolls.
Wait, is he dead now or is
I mean, a lot of people call Florida heaven. They say it's the land of chupacabra iguanas.
Yeah.
And,
sounds like heaven to me.
Okay. So, interesting. Okay. So the headline is, all right. This is do we ever decide, is it Ars Technica or ARS Technica?
I say Ars.
Ars Technica.
Like
augmented reality wins big in First Amendment legal flap. Quote, Pokemon Go craze prompted a Wisconsin county to regulate AR gameplay. See, that does not sound like it won big. It sounds like AR lost that battle and is now regulated by state authorities.
Well, maybe it's loosely regulated.
I guess, yeah. The question here, and I have not read this article yet, but the question is whether or not it would be open for other people to either sue it or if it didn't have any kind of blanket recognition as a technology by the government.
Okay. Well, so the text reads, a judge on Thursday declared as unconstitutional a local Wisconsin ordinance mandating that the makers of augmented reality games get special use permits if their mobile apps were to be played in county parks. Now, this is very weird things.
Yeah, that's a very, that was a weird local law to have. You need a permit to use...
Yeah, you might say forward-thinking law, because I know that here on this very podcast, we were talking about how cool it would be to run around parks but feel like you're in a medieval battleground and so on.
Sure. But what I'm saying is the need for a permit from the makers to use that – to include that data, that map data.
Well, specifically, it's the makers of augmented reality games. So let's say we wanted to make a game called Journey Quest, the game.
Journey Quest
and,
Go.
And for us to have the right – to essentially point to pieces of a map, to include these exact tracking locations, they're like, no, we own the right for you to imagine things happening at these locations and for us to do it. It says here, the law, the nation's first of its kind, was challenged on First Amendment grounds amid concerns that it is amounted to a prior restraint of a game maker's speech. What's more, the law was seemingly impossible to comply with. Federal lawsuit was brought by Southern California company named Candy Lab, the maker of Texas Rope'em.
Oh, dear. God, what?
An augmented reality game with features like Pokemon Go sued Milwaukee County after it adopted an AR ordinance in February in the wake of the Pokemon Go craze. So if we're going to be as generous as possible, Justin.
Yeah.
On one side of the spectrum, you have the fact that Pokemon Go... part of his setup was that it took all the places of interest and it put Pokemon Go gyms in them, right? Which really got awkward when people showed up at the
At cemeteries.
Well, and specifically at the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah.
And the Holocaust Remembrance Museum. And they're like, hey, could you please not play Pokemon Go here? Right. We understand there's a gym or whatever.
So Pokemon Go is the company Niantic, which previously was known for the game Ingress, which is a far less colorful game. It is more of a game of competitive check-ins than it is anything else, where two warring sides battle for turf. But you really just need to go to a place, check into a place, and if more of your team goes there, then you hold that turf, yada, 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 right?
Right, right.
Pokemon Go has that veneer of, like, gotta catch them all, where you're like, oh, no, like, I'm going to remember the 6 million loss and get Bulbasaur. Like, that's not as cool of a thing when you clash those two elements. But certainly what is has proven to be even now the special sauce for it is that allows you to find these sort of natural hotspots using omnipresent location data to know not only where can I go get Pokemon, but now that they've evolved it, to gather with other people to do group raids. And that's really, I think, kind of the next level of where these sort of beyond AR, which is kind of the visual representation of it, but location-based games are going, is just like naturally – where do the people that you would best get along with happen to walk? And can they build a game on top of that that allows you to interact with those folks?
Yeah, the so the problem, I think we all agree, is a problem. If you're the curator of you know, the Holocaust Museum or whatever, and you got people coming in making a lot of noise, catching them all, you certainly, that is not in line with your vision of what you want to have happen on your museum property. But the question is, how do you go about fixing that? And, you know, you could...
Now, they
you know,
did... Niantic had a form of like, hey, if you don't want to be a Pokestop or a gym or whatever, like, fill out this thing, tell us where you are, and we'll get rid of it.
Sure.
It was pretty no questions asked.
And the counterpoint to that would be, well, like, well, yeah, Niantic is good, but not everyone's going to be good. Mm-hmm. Some of them won't even have a form, and you're just telling me any old company can make a Pokestop anywhere they want?
Sure.
And so that's where... not unreasonably, you turn to the force of law. You're like, well, let's just make a law against it, right? But then, of course, there's perverse consequences to that law. And I think from what I'm seeing on this judgment, that seems like they ruled judiciously, where it's like it is no different. It is no more or less an infringement on my ability to do free speech for me to say, hey, everybody within the sound of my voice – let's all show up at this museum at the same time and stage a protest, do a flash mob, do a whatever, right? It doesn't matter what it is. But that is a free speech thing, as I am saying. Wouldn't it be funny if we all did this thing at this time? That should be legal. And I don't think there's any difference between that metaphor and what's happening with an AR game, because essentially all you're saying is if you show up at these geographic locations, these coordinates, then you have a high likelihood of receiving a reward that will make it worth your while.
So this was the county's argument against this Texas Ropem game. Quote, Texas Ropem is not entitled to First Amendment protection because it does not convey any messages or ideas. Unlike books, movies, music, plays, and video games, mediums of expression that typically enjoy First Amendment protection, Texas Ropem has no plot, no storylines, no characters, and no dialogue. All it conveys is a random display of cards and a map. Absent the communicative features that invoke the First Amendment, Candy Lab has no First Amendment claim, which is a very specific argument against this game and not AR
and
geolocation, rather. Games in particular.
Well, and I think it's a very poor argument too, because everything they just said also applies to a dance troupe. For example, you know, when they made the music video back in the late 90s for "Praise You" by Fatboy Slim, they did not, you know, they didn't get permission. They all just showed up in one place, pressed play, and they all did a cheesy, hilarious dance. And that seems like, you know, that there's no dialogue, story, blah, 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 all that stuff.
I think really that you've kind of hit on it, that in the motivation there is not much difference. But where there is difference is control, because now the government can talk to one company that can turn on or off this functionality. It is harder to control when it is just a bunch of people saying in word of mouth, hey, let's all meet here. Let's all do this. Even if you go to the person who printed out the flyer, doesn't mean that idea is dead. Whereas Texas Ropem from not Candy Crush creating a not Pokemon Go game seems like a ripe target for the government to say, hey, we don't like this. You need to turn it off now or we're going to fine you. You are in violation of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And the First Amendment approach is weird to me because if we're talking about, I mean, we're talking about rights of assembly, but the state is arguing that there's no actual expression and thus they don't get permission.
And that's the thing that's probably why it got struck down is that's an extremely poor argument because it basically says, well, we don't see the point of all this dancing. Therefore, you know, therefore dancing ain't self-expression.
Sure. Yeah. And so this the judge, J.P. Stattmuller, issued a preliminary injunction. So it was not a full ruling, but the outcome of the trial is set for April.
Well, of next year?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm in favor of this ruling as we've seen it so far. We will see if for no other reason than because adore the idea of the more we divorce our for lack of a better word, our spiritual beings from our physical corporeal bodies. Mm-hmm. The idea that I could physically be in Zilker Park, but I can actually be dancing on Titan, you know, the moon, is wonderful to me. And I want there to be more of that weirdness. It was Salvador Dali that said something along the lines of, it's a pity that so little of what could happen does. And all of this AR stuff, all of this opportunity to, you know, let's all congregate in literally any place and have a, you know, I love the idea of the silent concerts. Have you ever experienced one of those?
Oh, silent discos?
Yeah. I've never experienced one, but that just has to be the most awesome, surreal thing ever. Yeah. I think
another interesting thing about this is because this Texas Ropem game is set up like Pokemon Go, right? Where you go to places and get cards, it looks like. But it's especially in this news article, like it's calling this an augmented reality game when really this is a geolocation game. Like the augmented reality is a feature, is a bullet point on a geolocation game.
Yeah, I guess that's not the
hot buzzword right now.
And any Poke trainer worth their salt turns AR in like the first 5 seconds just to save battery.
It's a battery drain. Yeah.
Because you're not pretending to catch the thing in the Wawa. You're doing it just in whatever stock background, so you don't have to use that processing power.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way that it, like the headline on this and just the discussion on these will continue to be. Like, I think in the end we will continue to see more articles framed this way as augmented reality games.
Yeah,
and not geolocation or public
check-in
space games
or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Which I think is probably not great for the AR medium.
Also, those aren't the battles that AR is going to fight.
Right.
You know, like AR in general, like the stuff that we're really going to think of as the defining AR games are really going to be more about, you know, where you – I mean, it's going to be more VR mixed with elements of what we're seeing. You know, like there's not a lot – unless you want to get into public recording laws – all the AR stuff is just kind of it's going to be a more private thing anyway, as opposed to geolocation, which by its necessity is going to have to play a little bit fast and loose with where people are, you know, allowed to walk, but maybe not allowed to conduct business, quote unquote.
Yeah,
but even then, what does that mean in a world where it's like just by virtue of that's interesting. So nowadays, there are, depending on where you live, certain restrictions about your ability to pull up in a taco truck and start exchanging money for tacos, right? Sometimes you need a permit based on health concerns. Sometimes you need a permit to physically occupy that space or whatever. But on the virtual side, like let's say it accepts bitcoins and so imagine this, the nutty idea. Forgive me, it's weird things. I get
sure.
this way.
Yeah.
Picture Amazon Prime, but Amazon Prime offers different prices for everything based on where you physically are when you make the order. And maybe there's a reason for that because it ties into their distribution or whatever. Like, you know, if you're here, then that means we can get it to X, Y, or Z or whatever. So as a result, there are certain geographic hotspots and in a dark version of this, maybe they would collude and like it's right outside of Whole Foods is where the prices are cheapest. So go to Whole Foods, get your shopping done, and then place a bunch of Amazon Prime orders or whatever.
Yeah.
But like the idea that you could violate those same rules because you would be creating the same nuisance that they are trying to stop by allowing any food truck to go anywhere. You'd be creating, but entirely from a different state, possibly a different country, just by announcing the prices are cheapest here, you could shape the actual actions and foot traffic in a disruptive way. I don't know. I guess all I'm saying is that I suspect this is not the last we've heard of this kind of concern.
Yeah, that does remind me of those the Amazon lockboxes, though. You've seen you know about these, right?
They're sure.
Like, you can go to some 7-Elevens or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can have it delivered there instead of your home or whatever. Like, that sounds like a similar thing, right? Where they've set up a public space that is easier for people to get access to the things that they order and return stuff. But, man, it is an interesting idea. The idea of
high you know
price
what? Yeah,
and shipping.
Here's a more tangible kind of thing. Let's say 5-10 years from now, everybody's got AR, they got VR goggles. Where you quote unquote are is not necessarily where you physically are, right? There's only so many places to do big assemblies in Austin. So we'll say let's pretend Zilker Park is the only place everyone can go, right?
Sure.
What happens when one group has a virtual funeral service for a well-beloved citizen of the area, and it's like, oh no, he had this whole presentation, he's gonna do whatever, and then yet another one double books, essentially says, well, at that same time and place, we're gonna have our crazy rave dance party with DJ Techno Be Casty.
Sure.
And so everybody shows up, you know, MDMA'd out and they're grabbing people, not realizing that I'm here for the funeral service. Like, I mean, sure. This is a real thing that's going to happen and kind of already does in little ways at conventions like we experienced at Dragon Con. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, right now we're less than 50 days away from our yearly excursion to Dragon Con in Atlanta, where not only is it the largest gathering of nerds, there's also at least one or two weddings that are happening, like not affiliated with the convention, but just white Atlanta Labor Day weddings. I mean, like the tradition, not the race, but also... white people, college football starts that weekend in the Georgia Dome, which is a few blocks away. And so now all of a sudden, what is normally just a big mixed use place for people to have a very specific experience now has to be shared, usually at the Hooters on Peachtree.
Right. Well, and there's definitely like it's so curious to see the two cultures clash. In general, it seems like it's the sports folk who were unaware of the nerd folk and not the other way around. Most of the nerd folk know that there are sports folk floating about.
Sure.
But like, you know, the shock and you know, agog responses of everybody, you know, who's like, what is that?
I will say this, that really the better takeaway from that is that how much everyone generally gets along. Yeah. You know, aside from a few people, like the people that don't dig the nerdiness of it, they just kind of sit there at the bar and they look on and probably, you know, make some comments to themselves and pass judgment. But by and large, we usually see them because there's somebody in a Roll Tide t-shirt that's taking pictures with all the cool costumes and having a great time because there's an element of their life that either they knew they wanted to indulge or were just delighted by when it pranced in front of them that they are now happy to be in the same place at the same time.
The equilibrium that AR or VR could disrupt there is the privatizing of the experience versus the very public experience in public spaces, right?
Yeah. Can I propose a very strange scenario that I could picture happening 15, 20 years from now? So you got one of these multiple AR or VR parties happening at the same time in the same space. And let's say culturally You're aware there's other bodies, but you know which people in this area are in the game and which are out of the game. So everybody's in the game shows up as another player, you know, wearing their medieval battle armor or whatever. Everybody not in the game just shows up as like a gray rectangle, right? So it's like, okay, that's an object I should walk around, but they're not part of this experience. Do not involve them or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine as a... I don't want to say an act of war, but as an act of protest or as an act of insurrection or something, like somebody somewhere could type some lines of code and replace those generic black or gray charcoal boxes with enemy orcs and it just says get triple XP by punching an orc. And you could press a button and start an actual riot in that moment, because like all of a sudden everybody wearing a headset could just start punching people who aren't wearing a headset, not realizing what they're doing. I don't know what nefarious ends this would be, but it's amazing to me that this is a non-zero problem of being a real thing.
150%. But also, we are dealing with a world in your scenario where we have solved via technology the very definition of reality. We are immersing ourselves fully, yet we have not solved scheduling because we are now in a mixed-use situation where we have double-booked it.
I mean, but again, to some degree, that kind of already happens, and this is a very soft version of it. But, you know, a lot of church groups all go to Six Flags on the same day, and they all try to have matching shirts so they know, and unfortunately, sometimes they show up.
Fist fight.
They're all wearing the same color shirts or very similarly designed shirts. Yeah, I'm saying this is not without precedent. I'm just imagining to its most ridiculous extreme conclusion a situation that we've never seen before.
Now here is something that I definitely have had personal experience with, and that was, you know, in the Go game when I used to write those, a lot of the missions were secret agent missions, meaning that you had to suss out who was seemingly acting normal but actually had this crazy adventure waiting for you. And that is something that in a world of geolocation and augmented reality, you could certainly see being more and more of a situation. So beyond there being necessarily like a hacking scenario where somebody would like, all right, redefine goblins as like sprites that exist where there are not people to just the people with mustaches or something.
Right.
Could certainly say, hey, look, this is a game of social needle in a haystack. And you have to find, you know, the goal is that we're all going to meet at this place, but you have to find the three other people that creates your squad. And now all of a sudden we've ill-defined the parameters enough that you are roping in strangers into something that they don't they wouldn't normally be a part of. And it could be uncomfortable and weird.
Okay. All right. So picture as a splinter of the Go game scenario, right? Because we've been talking about public land or I think we have.
Yeah.
But imagine... like when I did the Go game, we went into a privately owned coffee shop and we looked for somebody who was repeating the same three actions over and over again. And then we found them and then we engaged with them. And then we all clapped three times, or to activate the agent, you walk into this private place and clap three times. At what point does private property rights... like in this case, I assume that the Go game is just in general a good neighbor, and if somebody doesn't like people swooping in, causing chaos and leaving, they'll work with it. But that's not the way the world of law works, where you have to make a universal decision. Like who has the right? Does the Go game? And I don't want to make it specifically about the Go game. Let's say the Mo game. Does the Mo game have the right to say double XP if you do it inside this person's private property?
I guess what's the permanence of that? Because if it's a Go game, that's, you know, a couple hours in a coffee shop where people are allowed to sit and drink coffee.
Sure,
already.
Sure.
But if you're saying, you know, this coffee shop will give you XP, but we didn't really tell them, like... is how big is the impact of the people you're addressing? How long is that?
And I guess that's active.
So legally, the Go game or anybody who would create a game based on somebody else's private property has no rights at all. to do anything with that space to make money.
Correct. But do they have the right to say, if you are physically in the center of this property, you will get 4x XP as long as you're there?
They can say, yeah, in terms of their own game. Like, I don't think that there's any law that says you can only offer regular XP when you...
I mean, this is the future we're headed to.
But it could be trespassing. Those people could be trespassing if they go to Starbucks. Well,
no. All right, here. So dig this. In Massachusetts, or it might be Boston or Massachusetts in general, you can't have happy hour because it incentivizes vice.
Oh,
so they have to come up with weird, different ways to offer drink specials, something that is common and still does happen, but they got to work it out in a weird, different way to avoid the blue law that you are incentivizing something that is bad for the public good. I can see in the future some element of like, yeah, you can't over incentivize your fictional currency or your in-world rewards because it is creating too much of a public nuisance. And we as a city government or something don't believe that it's good for people to be carousing around these places looking for magic glitter eggs. So no magic glitter eggs unless it's on public property.
Well, especially and you could see as a moment of like civil protest. It's like, okay, the only way to get the enchanted platinum egg is you got to go outside this embassy and shout real loud, "Up yours, country of the embassy!" Just the louder you shout, the more eggs you're gonna get.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
Put your mic up to your mouth when you scream. So we can measure the decibels that affect the ability for glitter egg spawnings.
Exactly. I
mean, it's an extrusion of a scavenger hunt in many of these cases.
Sure.
You're getting people from a central location to go to all these different places, find different things. And so what is your culpability if you ask people to do something irresponsible or be somewhere that they're not supposed to be?
Well, and... I mean, obviously, you're on – I think the short version is you're on the hook for whatever it is you – if you are the party that incentivized somebody to violate or trespass or whatever, then you're culpable for that stuff. Mm-hmm. But now all that does is take me to the next level of thinking like, what if that's part of your art project where it's like you put up giant signs saying you will go to jail if you set foot over this, and then you incentivize it so super highly just to cause that agony of like, are you mm-hmm. the kind of person – that is willing to go to jail for this game by stepping in to get the 4X XP. I don't know. These are going to be fascinating questions.
Here's what I would say. That number one, anybody who plays the game of weird things will get 4X XP if they go to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Heck
that
yeah.
is where you this show.
Well, especially if you're one of the next three patrons that get us back over 400 patrons. It's not too much. It's not too much for us to hope for 420, but all I know is that there are three of you right now. There are three of you right this minute yeah. who, for whatever reason, haven't gotten around to joining the ranks of the proud and being a Patreon to keep us on the regular and make sure the weird things are in your face at all times. Why not make that decision right now? Just a buck an episode. You'll never notice it. It'll never show up in your credit card. You'll see it on your credit card. Yeah. But you will. Every time you see it, you will say, "Ah, I don't know. I like those guys." Yeah. That's almost a quarter a piece.
And it's not for nothing if you can get early access to After Things in an RSS feed, which
that's
you would
right.
normally have to wait for a few days. You also get what else? Oh, you get a special green color in the Discord.
Oh, that's right.
And you get access to the Diamond Lounge with a super secret back room.
Let me just say, there's no sex in there. That's all I can promise.
So yeah,
definitely no sex for real.
Okay, look, my whole point was to say that as if maybe it wasn't true, but all I did was tell the truth, and just
no.
I don't. Patreon.com. There you go. Now you know. Man, I apologize, guys, because I feel like I've been kind of two minds because big political news is breaking that Anthony Scaramucci, the very colorful communications director after 10 days in office, has been removed. So everybody is freaking out about that.
Is there a can we talk about whether or not he's a reptilian? and whether or not the reptilians are out of the government these days. Is this an ousting of intergalactic proportions?
What if he wasn't? What if he was the one that wasn't a reptile?
Oh, they figured out. They're like, I'm sorry. We really thought you were a reptilian. Yeah. Like
it was one awkward moment in the Capitol Hill shower, and they're like, oh, wait, really? You're not? Oh, all right. Oh. Then, yeah, you got to go.
Ooh, yeah, about that.
So, all right. Well, did Andrew send us anything else?
Yeah, he did. Allow me to open the second scroll.
Okay. Open the second scroll.
Do you have any sound effect that can be the scroll open? Okay, there we go. Good. Headline. Alien ships near Saturn? Ex-NASA scientist claims of their existence.
Well, this guy was from NASA.
Yeah. A former NASA engineer at the Ames Research Center claims aliens are in our solar system and they're creating rings around planets like Saturn. Okay. Hold on.
Doesn't Saturn?
That's. You would think that maybe Saturn
has rings?
Yeah. You're telling me that no rings happen naturally?
Can we talk about the nature of experts?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Go.
Because I think that we are in a very, very weird, not a weird place, because I think this is probably a far older problem than anybody wants to give it credit for, because everybody wants to blame the internet for stuff like this, where it's like the quintessential headline of place or person you should trust says controversial 50-50 opinion or less likely, right? Like that's if you really look at headline writing, that is 50% of just all viral headline writing, right?
Yes.
Just doctor says only eat chicken fat, right?
We're like, by the way, this is a doctor I want to meet.
So when it comes to just experts in general, you have to be curious about it. But also you need to – I think it benefits you greatly to also understand – that not everybody who knows a lot is always right or is even less prone to say stuff that is fantastical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the researcher, he was a former NASA engineer at Ames Research Center. He wrote a book in 1986 entitled Ring Makers of Saturn. The book highlights that there are massive alien ships around Saturn, which Bergen dubs ringmakers, including ones that have actually created some of the rings around the gas giant.
I mean, that's fine. But also, what's this about the YouTube channel, Secure Team 10, has nearly 900,000 YouTube subscribers?
That's right. There's just a conspiracy theory YouTube channel that found his comments and got a quote from him and posted this video about it, which is where this article is sourcing from.
Yeah. So is the quote current at this point?
I believe so.
Okay. Wow.
Do you want to do a collab with Secure Team 10?
Dude, I know that collabs are pretty.
They're pretty
powerful.
Helpful.
Pretty powerful. Seems like maybe we should reach out.
Hey, reach out. Yeah. Just let them know, like, hey, look, Secure Team 10.
So Waffleophagus says, again, what did he do at said research center? If he's a janitor, then, well...
No, he was a NASA engineer at Ames.
Right, but I'm saying, like that's...
A custodial engineer?
I'm saying that is a bad question because it indicates that, you know, a janitor can be right and a nuclear physicist can be wrong, right? And
sure.
Yes, you can.
Jobist. It's classist.
It's human for us to want to, you know, read into what station somebody has. But ultimately, you know, if you're evaluating the strength of a claim, I don't think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is we always look to find a way to disqualify a source beyond the information. And this happens all over the place in science. It happens in politics. It happens in culture. That the question then becomes like exactly what Waffleophagus said. Well, what? I mean, he wasn't one of the important people. He was one of the dumb people, right? Right. As opposed to, hey, look, maybe this is just somebody who has a crazy opinion. He could be the head of that research center. He has a crazy opinion. A lot of people have crazy opinions. In fact, if you don't believe that the smartest, most intelligent people in your life don't have crazy opinions, then you need to talk to them more because they yeah. all.
Yes, a million times yes. Can we hear?
I was saying this, Brian. Have you noticed that people have really, really weird opinions on the pyramids?
You mean like people we like know, or made? Just people in general?
Yeah. Like just like in a social setting, right? Friends, people you know, people you like, people you trust. The more you get into conversations about the pyramids, the more I have found a tremendous diversity of opinions.
Well, okay, that has to be an artifact of party talk, because if we're at a party and then, you know, we're both sharing a beer or whatever, and you lean over, you're like, hey man, what about those pyramids? What do you think's up with those? Like, I'm gonna not lead off with the most boring response, which would be, I don't know, I think they were tombs meant to aggrandize each particular pharaoh's existence so they would be remembered for eternity.
Mm-hmm. So you think that's just social peacocking to come up with the, like, well, you know, ancient aliens and grain silos and all that?
I suspect so, but I don't really have much to back that up.
That is the whole backbone of the ancient aliens thing, right? It's just that there is this suspicion that, like, well, it's not like we're making pyramids now.
Well, okay, can we talk about, like, I'm pretty sure that all of the ancient alien stuff is just thinly veiled racism. Like, it's basically
there is a line of thought that, like, man, look at all these. Wow, it's kind of crazy that all these civilizations needed help because they couldn't do it by themselves.
Well, and that's like the founding thesis. Like, come on, you're telling me a bunch of, you know, 2,000-year-old dumb people are going to be able to, I don't care how many slaves they had. You can't push a block uphill. Everyone knows blocks don't go uphill.
Right. They're so busy doing all the other important physical labor of the time, like Pokemon Ancient Go.
Ancient gold, geocaching, original.
Alexandria Ropem.
Okay, so how many people do you think, what percentage of people, if you were to ask what's up with the pyramids or how do you think the pyramids were made, what percentage, if we were to ask on Twitter right now, do you think we'd come back with?
All right, so, no, the question would be, do you believe that we have the full story on the construction of the pyramids? That it is exactly as we know, right?
Oh, that's interesting though, because I guess I don't know the nature of what traditional history of the pyramids says and how certain that is.
How would you put it? How would you write this survey question to say?
Okay, because the temptation is to lead them one way or another, right? Where it's like, right. Do you think we got the whole story on how pyramids are formed?
Yeah, so take that verbiage out of it, and yeah. It's just are the pyramids temples to great pharaohs or not?
or like, were pyramids built by humans or not? Is that
by only humans? Okay. But even yeah. then, now it, you allow elephants.
Yeah, the ancient aliens theory is like, yeah, like they had humans doing it, but they also had, like, you know, I don't know, moon dust or something to, like, lift the things easier.
I don't know. I don't even know how to phrase the question that it would be neutral.
I guess the reason why I brought this up to begin with, as we figure out, because I think we should put this out. We should tweet this out. We should have
we'll do a live experiment. In fact, I'm loading up Twitter right now so we can all ask at the same time. But okay. but
I think there was a teacher of Andrew and I's when we went to the same high school that was very influential. One of the first people that really taught me the importance of science and skepticism and was a tremendous formative influence in my life that had a little bit of that ancient alien stuff in him. Like he just,
okay. And there's a former NASA rocket scientist I know who just has an itch to talk about crop circles and how they really could be made by aliens or whatever.
I mean, like, absolutely. Like, and that's you know, Ben Carson had the thing about, like, you know, the pyramids being used to store grain and they weren't for, you know, pharaohs or yada, yada, yada. Like, I'm like, all right, number one, historical accuracy is a debate that I think is kind of fairly rudimentary and boring. What is more interesting to me is, like, man, there's a lot of people that have a lot of opinions. And
well, and they also seem
the mainstream.
Many of those opinions seem not so terribly concerned with the facts. So okay.
I got it.
All right, you got it?
Yeah. Do you believe aliens were involved in the creation of the pyramids? Is that feels neutral?
Because the only question is that it's now we're leading them to the idea.
Wait a minute. Okay, do you believe that there's absolutely nothing supernatural about the creation of the pyramids?
Is that just asking?
But if they
believe supernatural, though.
Well, says like if you believe any kind of alien stuff, if you believe at time travel, interdimensional, whatever, mm-hmm. like you're gonna have to say no. I think there was.
But if you believe in aliens aren't supernatural.
Okay, so that's a semantic.
And the internet
quicksand.
Loves to be pedantic.
Yeah. Okay. So what if we did it as a Twitter survey, a Twitter poll?
Yeah.
And it's like, which of these stories about the?
Come on, guys. Wait a minute.
What?
We're getting another call here. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, which show did I call into?
You called into Weird Things.
Weird Things. I just want to know, where do I sign up for the Weird Things meetup in November where we're going to go watch the Falcon Heavy launch?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, you know what? You're not wrong, caller.
Yeah, I don't know, caller. This is the first time that any of us have discussed it, so it's a great time to do it on the air. We'll have to get back to you.
What I understand is I was told there was going to be a meetup in Central Florida on the day that SpaceX plans to launch the Falcon Heavy and try to land three core stages, and that there's going to be a live Journey Quest, apparently, and even with people from the Weird Things crowd participating and playing characters.
Wow, Florida man! You no half measures with you, sir. That sounds fantastic. We'll have to figure out how confident are you, Florida man, on Falcon Heavy's launch date.
I would say that I'm as confident about the Falcon Heavy launch date as I am about any rocket launch that's totally experimental and may not happen.
Good point. Good point.
I understand that the Weird Things crew is planning to put some other cool, fun activities going on there, like a live Journey Quest, etc. So even if we don't see a rocket launch, we're still going to have a lot of fun and get to hang out with everybody else. Maybe go to Disney one day, too.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I definitely look forward to checking my schedule to make sure I don't already have a thing.
I don't think there's a specific date. I think they're just saying November right now.
Dude, I will so be there for that. Hey, random Florida man, I'm just going to assume you're the kind of caller that would call in having an idea to put in proportion just how big a launch this would be relative to, say, a shuttle launch or any of the previous Apollo launches.
I would speculate that this will be on par with probably a shuttle launch, which would be huge. I would speculate that the added thing with this launch is the fact that you're going to be able to see two boosters come down over Canaveral plus the third one land on a barge. Now, the question of will it happen on the launch day, will that get pushed or whatever, that can happen. And we want to find out what kind of launch window they're looking at. But considering this isn't trying to do an ISS intercept, it means that they can have a longer launch window per day and they can push it over a day. So that's why I would say that if we wanted to do a meetup, we could figure out like how to have some flexibility there, but just have a great time even if nothing takes off.
And there's no they're not going to try to land all three of the first stages because basically you got three Falcon whatever the regular one is right now strapped together.
Yeah, for the Falcon Heavy. Last I heard, yes, they are going to. The center stage is going to land on a barge, and the first two stages are going to land back at Cape Canaveral.
Oh my goodness! All three of them landing?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's assuming it doesn't blow up on launch.
Yeah, although that would be pretty cool to see too, but I'd be more disappointed by that. Well, hey, caller, if you the thesis that just before you called, whoever it is you are, Florida man. When it comes to opinions about the pyramids, you hear a lot of kooky theories bubble up from the surface. If we were to do a live Twitter poll experiment right now, how should we phrase it in such a way that we can suss out how many people believe that the conventional story of their assembly is the right one?
How many people know what the conventional story is would be my first question.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and that's the problem with that is you talk to people about pyramid construction, you find out that, you know, they're recalling something they heard from 20 years ago and haven't followed sort of the latest data. Like, you know, we found the quarry right nearby where the limestone, you know, where the stones came, were cut from.
Yeah. Huh.
You know.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. Thank you very much, Florida man.
Glad to be of service.
Florida man. Wow. A caller. He's a
Florida man.
Very helpful. Very knowledgeable.
Very proactive.
I feel like I should tweet out something. I'm going to come up with some kind of question.
Okay.
But yeah, you guys.
I will back your play. Whatever you want to tweet.
Yeah, we'll retweet it on the Night Attack.
Okay. Well, here, Bryce. You want to give us? You want to open another scroll?
Sure. Oh yeah. I saw this video earlier this week. This is a cool little video. Do you guys know about this video game called Ultimate Epic Battle Simulator?
No.
I think it's early access in some capacity, but the idea is that you get a battlefield, you can set up a landscape or flatlands or whatever, and you pick, you build out two armies of all these different types. You can do knights and zombies and all sorts of different types of soldiers and stuff. And then you put them on a battlefield and they fight against each other. And so this one was making the rounds earlier, like this past week or so. You know what? This might not even be the same one. This is like an early one. Pitting this specific video pits 5,000 Jedi from the Star Wars franchise, or I think they call them Sabermen or something, light Sabermen or something, versus 2,500 cavalry. And so we can cut here to watch this large-scale battle.
This is astonishing. This is so if you've ever seen, like, in 3D renderings, there's particle physics. You're just watching an astonishing amount. Oh, my God. You were watching the wholesale slaughter of cattle, of horses and cavalrymen at under a rainbow brigade of lightsabers.
Yeah. It's we can speed it up a little bit because this video goes 20 minutes, but I'll tell you this, it is pretty one sided.
So who wins?
Oh Jesus!
And it's a graveyard. It is just a corpse.
Corpse field, yeah.
Yeah.
So it looks like the Jedi are holding way strong as they are just mowing through all this cavalry.
That's right.
So what is this engine?
So I don't know the engine, but it's a new game that came out, Ultimate Epic Battle Simulator.
Oh, wow.
And so all you do is set up these big, large-scale battles. So the Laser Knights, that's what they're called, just totally clear house. I don't think usually sometimes you can see numbers, but I think if you look over, there's like a handful of the laser swords on the ground. Like it's a trouncing.
I guess that's the thing is the question would be how you tune up exactly what each person is, right? Or the variable, because this is all just a super epic number crunchy version of a D&D campaign, right? Like you are just in graphically represented. Every conflict is, you know, roll one defense, roll one offense. Let's see, how long it goes until, you know, there's one side that's victorious.
Yeah.
Okay, here's how I'm posting this on Twitter if you want to follow along. I wrote, important science question about the pyramids. There we go. It says, important science... let me correct my spelling of important. There we go. Important science question about the pyramids. Were they made with... And there's two options. 100% humans, ancient tech, or two, something more. Is that a fair way to put it?
Wait. Humans and ancient tech are on the same option?
100% humans using ancient tech, although I couldn't put using, so I put 100% humans, ancient tech, or B, something more. Like literally anything other than humans using ancient tech.
Got it.
Is that an okay way to phrase the question?
Yeah. So I guess maybe set it for a few days, and so people can go and maybe the listeners can go voice their opinions.
All right, I'm going to make it a five-day journey.
But we can watch the votes come in. You're posting this on your Schwood account, SHWOOD.
Yep, there you go. Okay. It is tweetwalked.
Okay, here we go. Important science question about the pyramid.
Tweeted.
Wait. Oh yeah, ancient. I got it. Well, you know, I'm skeptical, but I do believe humans made the pyramid, so I'm gonna vote.
Oh, look at that. The first way already the votes are in. 100% of Rice's say. this third one. Okay. Oh, yeah. So this third scroll, this ancient Jedi thing. So yes, it does make sense that really all computer simulations show us are the results of our inherent biases as we set them up, as we configure them, right? Because at some point somebody estimated, well, how much force, how deadly is a lightsaber and all that stuff.
Versus this ancient military technology that is, you know, how many layers of obsolete do you count a Spartan versus a lightsaber?
I'm going to say, but what it doesn't factor in is tactics and strategy, because we're just watching ants overwhelm other ants in this version. Sure. Whereas I have to imagine 25,000 or 40,000 Spartans, you would basically just say, don't even bother to engage. Just everybody barrel forward and try to run them under your feet. And I don't feel like the Jedi would be able to stop 40,000 mounted. Or I guess these are Spartans.
This is the more popular video of 10,000 Jedi versus 40,000 Spartans.
Well, yes, of course the Jedi will win that. You got sticks against lightsabers. What are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea is that they are starting them surrounded, right? That it was just a little cadre of laser knights.
Yeah,
laser knights.
They have now et their way slowly but surely throughout the entirety of the Spartans.
This reminds me of the video game Rome Total War, where it would do this kind of thing baked into the game. And in fact, like, the engine was so good for at least rendering the way, you know, Roman battles went, that they ended up using it like on a National Geographic or a Discovery Channel thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, now let's cut to the game Rome Total War. Probably look like this. And they're like, what about this one?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
But, yeah.
There's 128 votes.
Oh, wow. Here we go. 57% out of 176 votes say 100% human and ancient technology.
Telling you what, man, people got opinions about this stuff.
That's amazing.
I'm saying.
43% are saying something more. They're not comfortable with the idea of just 100% people using 100% old stuff that they had back then.
Now I think if you drill down, right, the something more could be multiple different things.
Well, sure, but the something more would have to include something besides humans and besides ancient tech, right?
Sure.
I think that's a fair way to couch it.
Yeah.
Because really what you're saying with something more is like, I don't believe the current story. There's no way old dumb ancient people with old dumb technology could pull it off.
Yeah.
Huh.
Hmm.
That is astonishing.
Very cool.
You guys want to do picks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a few. You know what? I'll do this one because I have more to say about it. Have you guys watched Ozark yet?
I did. No. I watched the first episode for Cord Killers, and I do want to get back to it. It was pretty cool.
The first episode was very challenging for me. Like, yeah? I felt just physically ill at how utterly and completely screwed Jason Bateman was. Like, I'm just like, there's no way. The trap is closing. And I realized that the last time I felt this way was near the end of watching The Shield, where it's like, there's just no way. And I realized that what they've done with Ozark is they've managed to take all of my favorite parts of Vic Mackey from The Shield, in that Jason Bateman just always has the right words at the right time. And is able to talk his way. That's his superpower, is to just know the right words to say.
Yeah.
And yet he remains, at the end of episode 4, by and large, a very sympathetic central character, unlike Vic Mackey, who is damned from the first episode. You're like, well, this whole thing's going to be about the trap closing on this guy who deserves it.
Yeah.
Whereas they...
And so, like, the elevator pitch on Ozark is that he's a money launderer.
Correct.
Who gets caught up in a bad deal that he wasn't a part of.
Correct. And makes promises where he's like, hey, I will make good on my now dead partners, parts that they failed on. And you know, basically the question that the person who was having the money laundered asks is like, I can't tell if you're serious and this is really a plan of yours or if these are the desperate words of a man clinging to life. And he's like,
definitely one of those.
They're like, here's some rope, go hang yourself or not. Good luck.
Yeah.
And so he goes down from Chicago to, Lake of the Ozarks and he's promising just an astonishing turnaround of the ability to launder a ton of money based on, you know, the popular summer season during that largely cash based thing.
Right.
But they do an amazing job of making you uncomfortable with all of the characters, including to some degree Jason Bateman, but him least of all. Like it's challenging and fun and exciting and my chest is tightening and I don't know how to feel about it. And I'm loving it. I watched 4 episodes yesterday. It's been amazing.
Cool. That's on that's a Netflix original.
Yes.
Ozark.
Yes. Called Ozark with Jason Bateman. Yeah. And wow.
You got a pick, Justin?
My pick is The Defiant Ones on HBO. Have either of you seen The Defiant Ones on HBO?
No, but I've seen the ads. This is about the Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, right?
Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. And initially when I saw the ads, I took it as a fairly self-aggrandizing kind of documentary, as it is, you know. Who really wants to hear the story of how, you know, the geniuses behind Beats by Dre finally conquered all, right?
Right.
But specifically when you realize that it's 4 hours. But I have to say, it was one of the best long-form documentaries that I have seen in a while. It is exceptionally well-made. It is great for creatives, as it deals a lot with just kind of creative energy and creative process, specifically through music. But beyond that, you realize how close to so much of the culture of the 90s both those guys were at different elements, specifically Jimmy Iovine, who ran Interscope, and effectively one of the most arresting sort of moments is as Interscope becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Jimmy Iovine talks about the kind of people that he wanted to bring in. And he realizes on two different elements that there are two guys that musically he just wants to go all in on. And he wants to give them whatever they want. And he wants them to sign whoever they want and to build whatever empire they want. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Dr. Dre, who brings in Snoop Dogg. And the other is Trent Reznor, who brings in Marilyn Manson. And the way that they interplay both of those, if you are a fan of any of that music, and certainly this hits me in my nostalgic sweet spot, but it was fantastic. It was really, 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 really good. And I can't recommend it high enough. It was fantastic.
Is all of that out now? Because I know I saw all of it. Very cool.
Stream all 4 hours. I believe it was directed by Alan Hughes, but the other cool thing is that, like, those guys are so connected. They have great interviews with everybody in fairly long form, including the guys who wind up getting had. Like, the Nine Inch Nails' old manager gives a really good interview. There's a big power struggle between Time Warner and Interscope, and the guy who wound up on the losing end of that. Talks for the doc in fairly open and honest language. It's really good. It's great stuff. If you're a fan of music docs, it's a must watch. If you're creative, it's a must watch.
Awesome. Cool. What about you, Bryce?
I just finished a game. I was playing it here on the Twitch channel with everybody, so it was kind of a fun sort of public experience. But I've been playing Nier Automata. Have you guys ever heard of this?
No.
So this is a sequel to, I want to say, a 2010 action RPG from Square Enix. And it's hard to describe, but basically it takes place on Earth in, I want to say, the year 6000. And it follows a pair of androids who are on Earth to fight these things called machine life forms. And so it's hard to get into it because it's a story with a lot of sort of twists and turns, but it is a mixture of like deconstruction of what humanity means in a world where there are very few humans alive, and what is humanity when almost all of the quote unquote living life forms are robotic and AIs and have their own sense of emotions and feelings and can discriminate against other androids and meanwhile have their own directives to go to war with the machines and go to war with the androids.
This sounds thematically close to Cargill's new book, which I haven't had the chance to read yet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's really cool. So it is a sequel to an older game, but the connections are such that you don't really need to have played it. Sort of all the like there's about 4,000, I want to say it's 2,000 or 4,000 years of time between the two games.
Gotcha.
But it is sort of this modern post-apocalyptic space, right? There's a theme park and there's also this big castle and a lot of the hub world is this like downtown urban area. And I think the best thing about the game is all of the lore and all of the setting and all the table setting. The whole idea behind the game and how humanity got to such dwindling numbers that they did and all the things that they tried to do to save themselves from this disease, the joke of a way that this disease came into this universe. This game, the original game, is a spinoff of a joke ending of a fantasy RPG.
What?
Where in that ending... they cast the big spell and the knights and the big machine are fighting this dragon, and they cast the spell and they end up in modern day Tokyo, and then they are blown up by stealth bombers.
Ha!
And then what happens when you unleash a disease and magic particles into the real world? Well, you probably are going to destroy the world. And so that is all lore stuff that the games don't even really touch on, but that's how it sets up.
Sure.
A mix of magic and modern technology and future technology. It's
wow.
Sorry. So this is which platform?
So this is on Steam and it's on the consoles. It's from Square Enix and Platinum Games made it. So it's actually really fun to play. I will say that I played it on stream, so I really kept to like the story stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you have time, you should do all of the side quest stuff because that's really where you get all these extra pieces of lore, all these data files and stuff. So like I ran through it in about 25 hours or so. But if you have 30 to 35 hours to spend with it, I think you will really dig. It does a lot of really cool stuff. The music of this game alone is fantastic. Okay, just last thing, right?
Yeah, sure.
So they wanted to do music and they wanted to have vocals and have it be this big thing. But thousands of years in the future, language will not be what it is today.
Right.
So they hired this lyricist and this vocalist to write future language versions of these songs. So you listen and these songs are technically in gibberish, but they are meant to sound, oh, this one sounds like Gaelic. This one sounds like French. But it's all nonsense. It's all just cadence.
Simlish.
Yeah. And it's still really beautiful, and the end theme of the game, which you'll hear quite a bit in the game, is also really good. So
right on.
That's Nier Automata. Ah.
Okay, all right, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah,
I just I'm going to save my other pick for another time. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Man, wow! That we did it.
We did it.
Ever since Andrew ascended to Florida heaven,
assignment heaven,
assignment heaven. We look forward to what knowledge he comes back with. But until then, gentlemen, it's been after.
No,
it's been
it hasn't. No, it's been weird.
It's been weird.
It's been weird.
Yeah. There we
see,
go.
This is why we have the pro do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.